The phoenix and the dragon in traditional Japanese tattoos symbolize harmony and power. That there is no inner strength without harmony. Brought to you by your two co-hosts, Brian Comstock, an e-commerce brand builder in the field of ergonomics with GetNeely.com. He's experimented with every form of scientifically validated human advancement, ranging from MDMA-assisted therapy, ayahuasca retreats, to peptides and stem cells. Scott Conway is a lead generation and sales expert who has a Hyros.com certified lead generation agency, LGG Media. He is a dragon.
Episode 19, The Phoenix and the Dragon. Joined by my co-host, Mr. Brian Comstock. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing very well. I'm super excited for this one. This guy's a freaking riot. I can just tell it's going to be a blast. He's one of those guys who will say he's a simple man, which means he's more successful than you. And he's very humble. He's a very humble guy and he's a freaking awesome dude. I'm stoked to be here.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm really excited. Really excited as well. Mr. Sammy Knight. Oftentimes is the oldest man in the room, as he likes to say, and he's the proud owner of 11 different businesses. And we're going to be excited to talk to you today, Sammy, about everything that you have going on and how it is that you got to this point. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Can you hear me okay? I'm doing mobile, so can you hear me fine?
Yes, sir.
All right, awesome. I'm doing very well. We're starting to finally get cold down here in the heartland of the South, and for us, that's usually incentive to start hunting. And so I'm like a 20-year-old kid that just got a new motorcycle. It's hunting season. I've got this cold weather. I'm like like we say when it comes to deer hunting, I'm like a buck in the rut, man. I'm ready to go.
I'm catching a little bit of a Southern accent. Where are you from originally?
South of Boston, okay. About 1,200 miles.
Okay.
I'm from Oxford, Mississippi.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I grew up, I was born in Kentucky and then moved to Oxford, Mississippi when I was 2. And I've been fortunate enough to, a lot of people go through their life and they always want to return home. Some don't, but all my life I wanted to come back home. So I went out to make my mark on life, if you will. And it took me to 60 plus countries and doing business in all of them and lived in some of them to about 2004. Got the opportunity to come back home and it's pretty cool.
Wow. What was your favorite country from everywhere you lived besides coming back home?
Man, I love China. I lived in Shanghai for a while and I loved that. I'm a guy that believes so much in people. It doesn't matter where you're from or what walk of life you have. I just think people are, they're just cool. And so being fortunate enough to go to the places that I went to, I'm a big people watcher and study of people and their actions. And so everywhere I go, I find that to be the value. Beautiful country. Every location I went had some natural resource element that was off the charts. But the greatest part of every place I've been, just people.
That's awesome.
How many languages do you speak, Sammy, like when you were over there?
I'll tell you what I did learn. In China, trying to speak Mandarin, there's 17 different languages in the country of China. The majority is probably Mandarin or Shanghainese. And they have the same word can have 4 different inflection points, and they each have a different meaning. Okay. And with my Southern ass accent, putting inflection on something that should be an immediate inflection, when you got to remember, when I say the word me, I can make that a 3-syllable word, not even trying to. So it just, and I ended up going, I better get me somebody that's really good at this. And I learned a few of the key words as I traveled around, but for the most part, I had some good people helping me. I also was in the product business, and it's cool. And I go back to the people part is if I'm talking to you about sewing a garment, we've got a common language that we can speak, and we can speak to types of fabric. We can do that just merely by touching. We can speak to stitch counts. We can speak to ribs and all those kinds of things. And we understand that. We don't say me in English and them in Mandarin, but we point and it's instant. They understood exactly what I was trying to accomplish. And if I wanted 12 stitches per inch or a double stitch, 2 and then 12, but I learned some of the numbers and all, but it was just easy to me. And I don't know, other than to say that the common language we shared was product and the belief in people.
So it sounds like in just taking that and not just focusing on that specific facet of life, but all areas of life, how do you go about connecting with people? Is it really just as straightforward as just finding that kind of common denominator?
Oftentimes, I tell you, the one thing that I don't ever like to say I'm good at anything, but the one thing that I'm very focused at is when I speak to somebody, I'm going to speak to you. And I don't care if there's 1,000 people around us and they're standing to wait to speak to you or speak to me. I'm not going to stop looking at you, talking to you until we're through with our conversation. And then turn to whoever was wanting to speak to whomever, you or me or whoever was in the conversation. And I've said this before, I believe you look at people, not through people. And if I'm looking at you in our conversation and not looking over your shoulder for who's behind you and who do I need to greet and what baby do I need to kiss that's walking up so I can get my card punt, I don't believe in doing that. I don't care who you are. I'll short your time until I'm finished with this, because I believe, I go back to the belief in people. I believe people deserve that respect. I don't care who they are. I'll tell you a funny story. So I used to work in the food business, and we did a barbecue cooking contest in Memphis in May and Memphis, Tennessee, and we sponsored it. So we provided a lot of the meat. There was a homeless guy, and he came up to me one night, and we're out grilling for a bunch of our clients. And he asked if we could help him out with some food. And I said, hey, I tell you what I'll do. I'll give you some money if you'll guard our truck for the next 2 days. And he said, oh yeah. And so we kept him fed and everything. He was a real nice guy, just hard luck. Paid him some cash, went on his way when we left. I thought, I hope something we did made a difference. So about a year later, my wife and I took our children up to Memphis to a circus. Our children were small. And we were running late, and we finally got there, and the circus was about to start, and I got 2 screaming kids ready to go see the elephants stand on each other's heads and all that. And I'm going, man, I got to get parked close. And I'm riding around looking for that golden parking spot. And all of a sudden, this dude comes running out in the street, and he flags me down, and he's pointing and pointing. I'm thinking, holy cow, who is this? And I'm like, maybe he's got a parking space. So I turn and my wife, oh, that guy's going to kill us. And it was that dude. Somehow he recognized me in my truck, and he was helping people park cars, and he had a spot perfect. And why did he remember me? There's no reason he should have, other than the fact that I gave him the respect that I'd give any man. And I think that's critical. And I think a lot of times we miss that.
Yeah, it's so easy, especially in the world today, if there's 12,000 things going on, there's so many distractions, it's very easy to forget to be present. And that's definitely something that I struggle with.
Yeah, it's just that you said simple. I think those are simple things to do that mean so much to others, but it also means a lot to you, to me, you know, that I did something that meant something to that guy. That somewhere down the road, not that he got anything free or he gave me anything. It's just that guy felt really good about being able to help me, because he came running to the truck and hugged me. Of course, my wife thought this guy's going to kill us. And he's just a guy who was down on his luck. So I use that to say it's pretty easy to give people the respect they deserve. That's not hard.
Where did you develop that? Is that something you got from your parents or dad, or is that just something you intuitively figured out, or how do you think you landed on this?
My parents were a lot like that. My dad, especially, he was a high school graduate, but very easy to get to know, a brilliant man in his own way that shared so much wisdom with others. But I believe their education they gave me as a child to always respect others, but I was always, early on, I was very shy, inferiority complex and all the things that you hear about people having. And it was the one thing that I learned I could do that kept me from having that inferiority complex. I could talk to you. And if you would pay attention to me, it instantly gave me confidence that my time and what I had to say meant something to you. And so I'd say my folks, and then the fact that I used it to get through whatever challenge. I've always been a class cut up, and if I could ever get you to laugh, buddy, I guarantee I'd get you to talk to me. So,
how did you get started? Like, how old were you when you got started on this path of entrepreneurship?
Was 44. 40? No, let me back up. I'm going to call it a semi-entrepreneurship when I was 37-ish. And that was when I was a minority owner in an outdoor company called Mossy Oak. The company was Hayes Outdoors, and the brand was Mossy Oak. And I really liked the taste of what that meant. The guy that founded the company, I didn't found it, but he did, along with some other great people. He kind of gave me that little piece of the business, but at the same time, he said, now you go run it, that I was responsible for. And it was probably one of the first times that I really felt like somebody said, go, we trust you. Not that I didn't have it in the food business. I grew up in the food business quite fast and went from a guy that was at the bottom of the totem pole to, when I left there, I was a senior VP and in charge of all international and domestic shelf-stable products, canned meats, canned foods. And so I got those opportunities. But I go back to, when did I really get started? It's when I was with Brian Foods, a division of Sara Lee food business. The big thing and the big buzzword back then was operate your department, your division, your responsibility as an entrepreneur. And I didn't even hardly know how to spell it. And so I found out real quick, it's making decisions, but also being accountable for those decisions. And I always believed when I started doing that, that if they would let me make the decision, if I didn't make the right decision, I believed I could fix it on the fly. And that taught me, once we started establishing objectives, I never was one that said, stop. If it's not the right path, stop and start over, because I feel like you lost your momentum. So I was a big fan of fixing it on the fly. You may have to make an adjustment, but don't lose sight of what you established as your goal. So about the age of 37, 38, and then I got out of the food business, or out of the camo business, and was buying and selling land and enjoying that, driving my wife crazy. And then—
How do you say that? What about buying and selling land was—
I was home. I'd been on the road 250, 280 days a year. And all of a sudden this guy, my wife married, he's there every day. He's like, when are you going to work? Aren't you supposed to leave early this morning? That kind of stuff. And so over time, I realized that I was missing something, kind of semi-retired, if you will. I guess that's what you call it. But I was missing the competition and watching things grow and watching people grow. And I got an opportunity to go to China. And I'd been over there a lot. And I went over there to help a guy with his business. While I was, but just before I went over there, I told a lady that was representing me as a real estate agent in a land deal. She was awful, man. I was trying to show a piece of property and raw land, and she came up in a pair of pumps and a skirt and a blouse. I said, how are you going to see this land? You need boots. And she said, I'm not. You're going to just show me what you want me to sell, and I'm going to sell it. I said, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard. And so I told her, I said, you're so bad at this, you should sell me your business. She laughed. Nah, it's a family business. I'd never sell it. About 2 weeks later, she brought me a proposal and an offer. Offer for the land, a proposal by the business. And so I bought it. And that's a long story and a funny one in itself. But I bought it and went in to close on it. And I signed the agreement and handed her a check. And she said, who's going to be your broker? And I said, me. And she said, are you a licensed broker? And I said, No, but I'll go down to the courthouse and get my license. I didn't think about what you had to do and all the stuff. And she laughed like y'all are. And she said, well, it's not that easy. You got to do this. And I said, then you do it until I can get it done. And she said, nope. So I'm selling it. So I bought a real estate office. I couldn't run it. And I had to make some drastic, quick moves to pull that off. But we did. Once again, fix it on the fly. And I bought the real estate company just to have something a little more to do. And then over time, you're like, how do we grow it? And what do we do next? And how do I expand it? And what about ancillary services? And how do I complement it? And that's how the rest of it built. It just started as a very, very small little business. And the first one I bought, we were doing $11 million in volume, not commissions, volume a year. And today we do about $600 million a year. And I've got, once again, incredible people that I get to work with. And I go, and I want to say about incredible people I get to work with, and it's in my book, one of these stories, is along the way, some people took some time to go, hey, Sammy, come here. I don't want to call you a dumbass for that last move, but what I'd like to do is give you some advice. And I was always a sponge when somebody took the time to do that. I was never a guy that went, no, this is none of your business. You stay out of my way. If somebody wanted to tell me something, I was going to listen. And I had a guy when I was in the food business, and I was in the marketing side of the business, and we were sending out cassette tapes. And I've told this story a lot, but that'll tell you how old I am. But I do remember 8-tracks. I had those too. But I was sending out cassette tapes, and on the cassette tape was our upcoming promotions for the sales guys to listen to while they drove. And most of the guys in the marketing department would, next week we'll have a 5-cent coupon on a pack of hot dogs. I'm like, who wants to listen to that? So I put a little background music to it, a little Marvin Gaye, heard it through the grapevine, had the grapevine story and promotion coming up and all that. And so we had this sales meeting one day, and the sales guys are in town, and I walk up to these sales guys, and I'm like, man, what'd you think about my tape last week? And they're like, oh, man, that's great. It's so cool. We love it. I love listening to it driving down the road, and I'm thinking, man, I'm really breaking that ice. They're picking up what I'm telling them, and they're really hot dogs for the coming week. And so I walked up to this older gentleman that was a regional manager, and I said, his name was Don. I said, Don, hey, what do you think about my grapevine pitch? And he said, oh, it's okay. And he was an older gentleman. I was in my 30s, and he was almost 60. I said, no, really, I want you to be honest. What do you think? And he said, it's just okay. And I'm thinking, man, all these guys like it. I said, what do you mean it's just okay? And he said, the world in this company, because of what you've accomplished, sees you here. And that tape puts you here. And I was pissed. I'm like, this guy doesn't get it. And I went home, and it just beat on me, and I didn't sleep hardly that night. And when I woke up the next morning from a hour or two of sleep, I thought, man, there's what he's telling me, and those guys were telling me the same thing. They were listening to the music, not to what I was delivering, and not to what was important. And he took the time, regardless of if it made me mad, he took the time to be honest. And so I went back to him that next day, and I said, I don't know why I'm saying this. I think you're wrong, but I'm going to take your advice, and I'm going to adjust it. It could have been one of the best bits of advice I ever got, because I started at that moment seeing myself at a different level than what I had been. And he didn't have to do that. He could have done like everybody else and, oh man, sounds great. And I'd still been doing it today. But he took the time to care enough to tell me. And I'll always be indebted to him. Once again, it's people, man. That's the difference. And people are simple. All I had to do was ask Don, and he answered. He didn't give me some data and everything else. He just said, this is where we perceive you, and this is where that puts you. Pretty easy.
Nothing ventured, nothing gained if you don't ask.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So that's how I got into the entrepreneurial space. And once again, easy. Now I'm at a point in my life. I was really fortunate early on to have a lot of good things happen because of the incredible people I was surrounded by. And so my path into entrepreneurship wasn't out of a need so much for income. I will say the one thing that entrepreneurship I did go into with an expectation to benefit, and that was health insurance. I'd gotten out of everything else, was living on some of the fruits, and I had a plan that said, if I ever start, or when I start a business, the number one thing I'm going to do, even if I only have one employee, is I am going to offer insurance, health insurance, and I'm going to pay for it. And we've stuck to that, regardless of how crazy insurance has gotten. And when I first started, it was about our 10th or 11th biggest expense. And today it's number two behind payroll. And I've stuck to that. And that was a need that I had, but I had a desire to make sure that nobody, regardless of how small we were or how big we got, I had a desire that families wouldn't have to worry about whether or not their child fell and broke their arm, that they could get it at least close to being paid for. And that's paid us big dividends over the years, and it's given me some great people. And now I'm at a point where, what do I do next? Because I don't want my wife to have to go deal with somebody in an industry that she barely knows other than what she's heard from me. And so I've started some succession plans with key people within the company, and I'm allowing them to buy me out of the company. So they don't have to pay me from out of their pocket. Let's just work this business in the right fashion and just pay me out over time, and it's yours. And then in addition, I have insurance policies on me, and it's in my will who gets various businesses if I die. And they're all set up so that my wife gets paid off and she just signs the businesses over to them. And these people worked hard. They deserve it.
It's incredible.
That's how much succession plan. Say it again.
It's incredible how much thought you put into both what the employees get, and then also ensuring that there's a legacy after you've made your mark.
Ensuring they're insured.
Yeah.
Yeah. These people, a lot of them took a chance with me when I said, come on, we're going to grow. What do you know about real estate? Not a lot.
Yeah. How do you get that confidence to do something that you're aware you don't have a good expertise in? Or in that situation?
Man, that's a good question. If I had to say...
Those are the only ones I ask.
Yeah. If I had to say how I do that, I am a sponge when it comes to something I don't know. Now, if you told me to do anything beyond check the oil on my truck, I'd have to hire somebody and bring them in. I can't sponge that. I don't have that way to think. But what I don't know, I think I'm smart enough to know what I don't know and comfortable enough to ask anybody that'll answer me that's in that space. And it's paid me pretty good dividends. But I think our ego gets in our way a lot of times when it comes to that. And when we can put that at the door and ask for help in that arena, we stand a much better chance to win.
Well, I'm taking notes on the Sammy formula to success. You look people in the eye and give them attention. You are comfortable to ask the right questions if you don't know something. If you had to conceptualize anything else that might come to mind of tricks or monikers of your success or things that you would pass on to other aspiring entrepreneurs, what other kind of messages would you have?
Don't overthink it. To me, this is, I can say it now after 40 something years of being in business, but to me, business is really simple. It's really easy to do. Family, personal life, all that's got complications to it, obviously, but business is simple. And the other thing I would say is learn early on how to separate business from personal. To me, business has no emotion. It's just business. So when you put emotion in it, where does that come from? It becomes personal. And when things feel personal, then there's a lot of complexities to it and a lot of challenges ahead. Making a decision, make that decision and move on, man. Don't get lost in it. And don't say it's, oh, my heart makes me feel I need to do this. No, make the decision off your gut. In business, I think that would be the easy and simple advice I would give you is never let business be personal, ever. And if it feels like it's got emotion, like somebody said, I've got all this time invested in it. Okay, that's what you get paid for. Not personal, not emotion. If emotion falls into business, you'll start making bad decisions.
So it sounds like you attract really high quality people. And I also think as soon as you get an organization bigger than one, you're almost likely to run into bad actors, medium to bad actors. People are going to do their self-interested motives. And I'm always curious how someone like you handles these situations. Do you call them out? Do you just keep observing? I'm sure it's situational, but life would be easier if we all just did what you said here today. And then I also think sometimes we run into people who don't do that. And just so another way of asking it is, how do you not make it personal when they're going out of their way to make it personal for you?
You're talking about somebody that may not be making life easy inside of the company.
But it can be a whole, it could be a partner, employee, boss, it can be a whole range of people playing their own political games or whatever it is. And that makes, that can muddy the waters.
Yeah, be comfortable calling them out. I don't want to be saying ugly words, forgive me for this, but shit smells like shit. So when you smell it, call it out. End of the day, address it immediately. And I don't wait too long to get rid of a bad apple, a cancer, a poison inside of a company. I don't spend a lot of time on that. If I did my job right and I interviewed the right person and outlined the right job responsibility and they bring drama in, that's putting bad emotion to me into the company and you're out. And look, the other thing I do as an owner or when I work for other people, I always had the belief that nobody's bigger than the company, even if you own it. And you have to always make the brand the hero. If you're not bigger than the company and you're damaging the brand by your actions, what do you do when you got to protect the hero? You get rid of them. And it's like hiring people. I did a post on this not long ago, but if you hire somebody for a certain job and they come in and that just doesn't quite work, and you try them in a couple of other seats in the business, seats on the bus, you have to not waste a lot of time in making the final decision that maybe the seat they fit best is back out the same door they came in.
They couldn't even do the back seat?
Yeah, they couldn't even get to the back seat. Sometimes you got to send them back out and show them where their seat is. Boy, if you allow somebody to stay inside a company, a partner in a business too long, and you see it going down, you got to stop that. And the only way to stop it sometimes is wish them well. The first thing you have to do is call it out and don't waste any time calling it out, I think.
So you keep the hens in the, you keep the tribe, you know, up to speed. But maybe outside of employees, has there ever been a scenario, whether business partners or any sort of extended network in your business, where you felt like they crossed you up and you had to handle that? Because most vetted entrepreneurs have been through the ringer on some level, and it's, they all have their stories. But I was just curious if you've ever felt like someone or some entity crossed you up and how you handle that.
Yeah, I had a partner one time. I'll use that. I've got a couple of partners now. They're good. I had a partner one time that we went into it with an understanding of what each of us contributed. And somewhere along the way, he forgot his understanding. And I didn't dot all my I's and cross my T's on the front end to get rid of him. But I finally, just raising enough hell, got rid of him, bought him out, all of that. But I say this, having a partnership is actually quite easy to do. There's two things you have to do. One is make sure what contribution each partner is going to make. And then in the operating agreement that you write, set all the rules on the front end. Operating agreement to me is like betting on golf. You don't win the bet on golf on the 18th tee box. You win the bet on golf on the first tee box before you play the 18 holes. And so set all those rules on the front end so that if it does go awry, and I learned this, everybody probably has to learn it, but if it does go awry, you got them out. And I love those that come in and say, the value of the company is actually 10 times what you're trying to tell me. I'm like, great. Look at our terms of our agreement. Now you can buy me out for that. That's how it works.
It's two sides of the coin there. Yeah.
Yeah. You get rid of them. You don't mess around. It doesn't mean I dislike you. One of my partners, is a very dear friend of mine. And since I made him get out and I bought him out and he pissed and moaned and everything else, and it didn't affect our friendship, which is really crazy, right?
That is I haven't been able to pull that off. That's hard to do, I feel like.
Remember what I said, you separate business from personal and you make that clear. And I bought one out not long ago and I said, look, dude, I was friends with you first and I don't want that to stop, but we can't keep doing this. And he said, I don't want to break that either. But that's all part of making that bet on the first tee box in that 18-hole round of golf. This is how we're going to handle this. And you'll never hear me say partnerships are bad. Partnerships are bad. And it's your responsibility to make sure they're good. And you do that on the front end.
And how do you typically look for a good partner? Do you look to offset their skill sets? Do you look at their attributes and ability to adapt to the role? Or like what kind of, I feel like a lot of hiring and finding partners and everything, it's just a lot of it comes down to your emotional intelligence of finding the right person that you can work with.
Yeah, I think the first thing you have to do is understand your strengths. What are you good at? And then find somebody that complements that. Whether that's a partner, or whether that's an employee, or whether that's a future partner, whatever it may be. And you hope I'm not getting too dark. It's dark outside. Y'all can see me, can't you?
Yes, sir. Yeah. You're good.
It's a face only a mother could love and looks good on radio. I think you just establish the rules coming in, but first know you. And I think a lot of times we don't really know us. We say we do. I know what I'm good at and what I'm not. And our ego allows us to say I'm a little better at some things that I'm not. And man, that's one thing I'm really good at. I know what I'm not good at. And I don't even try to be good at it and try to stick my thumb in my suspenders and go, look at me, I can do this. I know where I'm weak. And also know where I'm strong.
And where's that?
Where I'm strong.
Yeah.
People reading people and understanding what I'm getting. I'm really good at that now. I made a few mistakes early on, but I had to learn from them. And I'm also good at, if I had to say something that I maybe stick my thumb in my suspenders, is planning the business long term. I've always been a budget guy and a plan guy. And then once we all agree and we get into the operating plan and the quarterly, monthly, annual operating plan, I'm really good at holding people's feet to the fire. We all agreed to this. Now, what's up? There's a market condition that caused it. Great. Where are we going to make it up? And pushing people, because everybody knows that when I push you, my common goal is your success equally to mine, because I'm going to reward you when you hit your numbers. I'm not going to push you to hit a number that makes me feel good. I'm going to push you to hit a number that makes you feel good. And then I'm going to reward you handsomely.
And Sammy, what you said is really interesting on planning. Like, how do you go about planning your days, weeks, months, like the actual tasks, projects that you need to do to move the businesses forward?
I start planning my business for like finalize next year. And when I say finalize it, September of the prior year, when I say finalize it, I got a kind of a map, a road map, if you will. Not a lot of the crossroads and the stop signs and red lights and all that kind of stuff, but I've got a path. And then I add to that from there. That's the end of September. And so I start thinking about, okay, what's my CapEx needs for next year? What do we have to do from a marketing perspective? And if we're going to grow the business 15%, am I in the manufacturing business? Do I have some cost of goods that I got to deal with? What about my supply chain? On and on. And so I start building all those pieces in. And then I finalize it in October for next year. There's some things that I can't accomplish next year. So I've always got an LRP plan where I'm looking at 5 years down the road. This year, I just added another year to my LRP. And what doesn't make sense for me to try to accomplish next year, I move it out here in maybe year one or year two, year three in my long range plan, so that as these years go by, I can do my plan for 2024 in about an hour. When I get to September of 2023, October 2023, I'll have most everything laid out for 2024 because I did it the year prior. So when it comes to finalizing my plan for the annual, I can do it in about an hour and I'll be done. So many people look at planning and budgeting as this devastating thing that takes me weeks to get it done. It really doesn't, because you're dealing off of history and you have an objective based on market conditions that you know, and you add some growth to that based on all the information that you have, the trajectory that you're on for the year, what the market tells you, because you've read those throughout the year. It shouldn't take you long. Specifics in operating your monthly plan may take a little bit longer, but that's an operational move. That's waking up in the morning saying, this is what we're going to do in a month, not laying out the roadmap. And then I'm always comfortable that if I get into a monthly operating plan, if I see that there's been a market condition that's going to throw me off my budget, I don't forgive that number. I move that number down in the year when I think I'll have a better chance to pick it up. Maybe the market's looking like in 2 or 3 months, it's going to come back stronger. So I'll always keep it in the plan. I don't erase it. But if I see that the market is making this terrible downturn, I just move that number over into the next year. It's going to come back, but I never erase it. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, so you're planning. So just to, for example, of this year, we just finished October. So you already have your 2024 plan, and that was finalized in October of this year.
I have my 2023 plan done. I have about 80% of 2024 done. I have about, 40, 50% of the bigger stuff for 2025.
And so those monthly operational tasks and projects that you have, who typically handles that or oversees that?
Those are my leaders in the companies. I know them. I sign off on them, but I hold their feet to the fire on what, because when we finalize our numbers, they've all seen them and they've accepted them and they've agreed to them. And so guess what? When they say, yes, we can do that, they're their plan.
Could you provide because it sounds like you have several companies and things going on. Could you provide a little bit of an overview of your portfolio, or talk about what excites you the most right now, or where things are going for you? Just a little bit of what the kind of stuff you're dealing with, so we could get a little more familiar.
Yeah. So I'm in the real estate space. I have real estate sales agencies. And then, like I said, I like ancillary services. I have a pretty good size property management business. I have a mortgage brokerage business. I have an appliance business. I have a real estate investment company. I have a consulting company. I've been consulting for, 20 years, mostly in the strategy space, whether it be marketing strategies or sales strategies, with some pretty good sized companies over the years. And that kind of encompasses, I have a HVAC business, said I had an appliance business. That kind of encompasses all the businesses. Like in my agency business, I have 4 offices. In my mortgage business, I have 2 offices. Each of them are standalone operating units, just like the agency business too.
How do you go about adding to that? Like, how do you say, you know what, 11 companies is not enough. We need to get another one.
I'm not looking as hard as I once was, but I think what I do is try to find what complements. It's like hiring people. What complements what I have? And then I try to stay in those spaces. Remember, I got into real estate and I didn't even know you had to have a license to run it. So
amazing story.
So I try to stay with things that businesses that complement those, you know, one that when you start getting into real estate investment, that gets pretty broad. Office buildings, residential development, houses. I've done those things and I try to move with the market on those. Market conditions are going to be a little odd. We think coming up, prices are coming down. Interest rates are going up. I think anybody got a little bit of change. Keep your eyes on real estate for a place to invest, whether it be a rental house or a rental apartment or Airbnb or whatever it may be. So I look to complement what I have. I think coming up, if I look at the real estate sales agency business, I think there's going to be some smaller real estate offices that are going to have a tough time making it. So I look for opportunities to present themselves there to buy some. I also remember I'm the old guy in the room a lot of times. There's a lot of other people like me that are the old guy in the room and they built the business from nothing and they don't have an exit. I look for those folks and that I can help with their exit because I don't want to stop. I love what I do, but I can help with their exit. Some of which is, hey, I'm not ready to quit working yet. I want to work for 3 more years. Great. We'll set up a program so you can work for 3 more years and I'll buy your business and we'll fold it in or we'll hold it as a standalone. I say this and I can say it because I am that person, but sometimes gray hair opportunities are really good out there and we don't take the time to sit down with somebody that's 70 years old and work the business and the kids don't want to take it over and say, hey, what are you looking for? Let me help you get there. And if you will take the time to do that, you'll be stunned at what you find.
It's really fascinating. I know Brian is doing some business brokering.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear this because I've been doing some kind of brokering of more online businesses and so not brick and mortar, not real estate. I also found out a similar thing that I'm supposed to have a real estate license for this shit and I don't. And it's once again, information that would have been more useful to me yesterday, but here I go. And yeah, so I just, it's, to me, it's always finding the right people. Like you said, for you, you call it gray hair opportunities. For me, I'm always looking for the right buyers for the companies and sellers that I have. So yeah, sort of related, but I was just curious, how do you go about finding those opportunities or meeting with these great, not all these gray hairs are on Facebook or whatever. So how do you kind of, is that a big part of your thing of networking and whatever?
Yeah, that's part of it. But I try to stay close to the business that we're in, the ancillary business. When you consult, you learn a lot along the way. And when you, half the time when I'm consulting for a company, I'm probably learning more than they are, or I feel like I am. And so you get to know the service companies. So I'll use real estate, the ancillary businesses that have supported your company. And you find out that this one's been in business for 50 years and the grandfather started it and now the son's running it and he don't have any sons that want to run it further. And he grew up in it. And so you just, if it's something that makes sense, you just take him out for a cup of coffee and say, hey, what are you going to do tomorrow? And it's easier for me because when I sit down with them, they look at me and they're like, dude, you're older than I am. I'm like, yeah, but I'm young at heart. I'm not going to slow down. And all of a sudden they open up and go, I don't have an out. I don't have an exit and I'm not ready to quit or I don't want to stop for 10 more years. Great. Let's put a plan in place to help you. For me to buy it, You keep running it. Let's see if we can expand it. We'll feed it. We'll grow this thing. And you start talking to a guy like that, and your plan is to grow it, and he gets a bigger play long term. Why wouldn't he listen to you? And 10 years from now, you pick something off. I'll be 74 then, and I think I'll still have 10 more good years.
And are these consulting or partial ownership arrangements? If you were to come along and say, hey, give me 5 to 10 years to grow this company with you and get you exited, like how do you arrange it so that it's in your behooves you along the way?
Yeah, it's a partnership on the front end. And then the growth is a shared growth for him as part of his exit, if you will. Establish a number. This is what I'd like to have, or this is what I'd like to see is some form of income the rest of my life. Or we have to sort through that. And then how do we structure it so that it fits what he's looking for and it fits what I'm needing? And if I can put, I believe this, if I can put my knowledge with his knowledge and a little bit of cash, I believe we can grow the shit out of that business. And I believe he gets what he wants plus some, and I get what I want.
How did you go about, Sammy, actually going in, say, for example, you just finalized a deal with an operator. How do you go in there to actually succession plan and so that it becomes like a self-managing team?
One of the first things we have to both agree to is that we're both a little bit of age on us. So what do we do 10 years from now when you're ready to get out, or 5 years from now if you get sick or your wife gets sick or I get sick or whatever the case? What does that look like? And most of the times these guys, I'll use probably one I did not too long ago. Most of the times these guys know the person that they want to take their place. They just don't know how to approach them because they've approached them as the owner and they want to make them an apprentice, if you will, depending on what the skill set is. And we develop a plan to approach that person that gives them an ownership stake when they reach certain milestones and start building out from there. It doesn't always work. We have to find the second one, the third one, before we get the right person that agrees to come on board. When you get my age, you have to have a succession plan and you have to openly talk about it. When you're your age, you have a succession path. But a plan is a little farther out front. You'll be okay for the next 10 years. You're still young. For me and for people in my same age bracket, we have to have a path. We have to clearly say, here's the steps. Now let's find the right person and let's give them a chance to help us grow this thing so that both of us walk away, you with what you need and me with what I need. I go into every business thinking about who's going to take it over. I haven't done that until about, I don't know, 10 or 12 years ago. But since that time, I don't want to run it forever, but I sure do buying them and building them and handing them off. And I've handed off a fair number already. I kind of like that. It's kind of fun. That answer your question?
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you.
What keeps you in the game with all this? Is it just a fun thing for you to do what you just said? Or how do you, when we look at 11 companies, what kind of keeps you motivated and engaged?
Man, it's two things. One of them I wear out, and it's people. And seeing people successful is just so cool. And if I had something to do, that's incredible. And I don't hurt myself working. I don't work 70 hours a week. I might work 10.
Still time to hunt.
Plenty. I make sure of that now. That's an obsession. I think what drives me is seeing others' success. And if I can be a small part of that, then it gives me a real good reason to wake up tomorrow. And I had a guy tell me a long, long time ago, he said, when this thing's all over and you look over your shoulder and you see them better than you were, He said, you were successful. And I think that's the way it is.
Yeah, I always thought people just say that to save face, but I recently ran into a similar situation. I've been hiring manufacturer reps to sell one of my products, and it just lit something inside of me. I originally did it to try to increase my business and increase my revenue. But now that I'm talking to these guys, learning about their life, learning about what's on the line for them and how much it matters to them, I'm like, fuck the revenue. It gets me excited that they have a way, like you said, to see them succeed or to help them succeed or to be any piece of their, make a difference to them. It's amazing. It really lighted something up inside of me that I didn't even know was there. And that's just a very small scale thing. So I can only imagine 11 companies like yourself. And if they care, I care. That's how it is.
Yeah. If you can make proud of what they do and excited about their success and be able to go home with a smile on their face because of the reward that they earned, that they take home. If you can do that, we don't have a problem with business. They'll do it. They'll do whatever it takes because you've shown them what success feels like. And I learned early on with some of the people I did business with that were extremely successful, that, and the most successful were the guys that said, I just want a little bit a lot of times. And greed gets in our way sometimes, and we say, I want a lot as many times as I can get it. I want a little bit a lot of times. And if I can do that with people and help them be successful. My dad told me a long time ago, and I've shared this, and it's in my book, but we went to a family funeral, and in the cemetery, there was a headstone. I'm condensing, but a headstone said, good father, good friend, good husband. And he said, that was an old friend of mine. He said, that's what you want to be able to have people say about you while you're here. And then as I started trying to get out of the cemetery, he called me back and he said, but what's really important is when you leave this earth, that everybody left behind you, you left everything you knew here so that they could be better. He said, if you do that, you're a success. I'm at that age where that really, not that it meant something to me in my 40s or 50s, that really means something to me now. And I wake up every day going, boy, can I help them be better? I don't always, and sometimes we fail, but that's what drives me to keep doing this thing. If you talk to my wife right now, she'd tell you that guy's, he's never going to quit working. That's just not going to happen because I love that feeling of winning, success, and others' success. That's just cool.
And I think you said a key word, earned. If you just give someone the paycheck they want, there's no meaning behind that. There's no purpose. But for them to earn it themselves and deserve it, that's a feeling for them that they, it can only be that way. And that's the best way there is. That's why we don't do politics, but we also don't do handouts. You got to go out there and earn it. And that gives their life, not just the paycheck they think they want, but that also gives them meaning, because we all struggle finding our own meaning in life.
When you give it to people, it becomes emotion. That's mine. I earned it. You should give it to me. It's personal. You stop giving it to me, so it becomes personal. If I earned it, not personal, business.
So it folds into that core thesis. I'm dying to ask, though, you mentioned the inferiority complex growing up or as a child. Is that still something that walks with you, or how do you relate to that now?
I think there's rooms where it comes back that I'm in, maybe. Stueman calls it the force of average, which is a great name in my opinion. But I think there's rooms that I've been in probably in the past 10 or 15 years that I feel maybe I don't belong, but I wouldn't be there if I didn't belong. And so then I turn it to my reason I have to find out is, why am I? What should I do to make myself not only feel like I belong, but to help make others feel they belong? Because if I don't feel like I belong, and I've been around a lot of powerful people in the world, if I don't feel like I belong, there's a lot of other people in there that don't feel like they belong. And so what drives me is to turn that around, try to find out who that is and help them through that. And then all of a sudden that inferiority complex goes away. I'm pretty confident today. Not that I can do everything. I'm confident that together we can do everything.
And change course on the fly if need be.
Fix it on the fly.
So Sammy, you just finished publishing a book, Behind the Gate. Walk us through that. What's that about and what inspired you to write that?
Actually, go ahead and read it for me page for page. Okay. It's getting late here. I need someone to read to me.
Let me tell you, if I read it with my country ass accent, it would go on to put you to sleep since it's late.
$60 audiobook.
It's kind of hard to think about a guy that wrote a book that couldn't even spell grammar. So Behind the Gate, it's always been my place to take clients and friends and business associates. And if I could ever get behind your gate, everybody has a gate. We've heard of people putting up walls, same deal. They have a gate. If I could ever get behind your gate and learn as much as I possibly could about you, your family, your children, your where you came from, how you got here, just like you're asking. If I could ever get there, I always felt after I got through my fears of inferiority, I always felt like if I could get there, with you or with any client or customer or friend or whatever, there wasn't anything that I couldn't do in business with you. If it was a sales, if it was a client and I was selling you hams, if I got behind your gate good enough, you'd never buy from anybody else. I wouldn't do anything underhanded or nothing like that. It would just be, I knew what your needs were. I knew that if you were going to buy holiday hams at Christmas season, I knew what your company expectation was. I knew what the margin requirement was. I knew what your bonus was that was tied to it. And I was going to make damn sure when you got that bonus check that I put the program in place that made it work. And you'd never forget. And the other thing I always did behind the gate, and the gate is a symbol of where my hunting camp is. You got to go through the gate. Once we lock the gate, you don't have any keys. I'm not the one with a key. So you're kind of on my turf. And so I always, when I take clients, I still take a few, but I used to take a lot more. I always made them give me their wife's name back in the early days and their address. Now it's their wife's phone number so I can send this. And I send a letter, short, 3 or 4 paragraphs, really short. But speaking about how hard it is, I know, to be a mother or home alone and your husband off at a hunting camp enjoying some time with a bunch of buddies. And I just wanted to say thanks for you stepping up and allowing, oftentimes I could say, my new friend to get away from it all. I'm going to send him home safe. And I just want to let you, and I always make sure I talk about their wife. I'm going to send him home safe, and I just want to let you know it's pretty cool to sit around and talk to a man that I do business with and him talk about how much he loves his wife. Thank you for allowing this to happen. Dude, the next time I asked him to go hunt, he went home. He would go home to tell his wife, hey, Sammy asked me to go hunt. She would instantly say, you need to go. He's a nice guy. That's the kind of guy you need to hang around. I had him. He was mine.
You saw that most important decision maker.
100%. But I learned to do that by getting behind his gate and understanding everybody.
You got past the gatekeeper.
Oh, I guarantee you. I got a friend I've been doing business with for 20 years. He retired about 3 years ago, but been doing business prior to that for 20 years. Even now that he's retired, his wife will call me and say, hey, Jim sure is getting, he's kind of moping around. And you think you might could invite him to go hunt? And I'm like, sure. You get, and if you think about it, if you can ever get behind that wall that people hold, you got to let them behind yours a little bit. You start to share what life means and you start to share what business feels like. And you start to share the kind of things that make a difference. And If I could learn those, then I can move in and help make a big difference. Hopefully, not always, but hopefully. So that's what it's all about, is getting behind the gate that helps us know more about each other.
How do you compartmentalize that, Sammy, with like that vulnerability and letting other folks behind your gate, and also, but at the same time, not making business personal or bringing emotions into business?
Because when I have them at my camp, it's not business. We're talking to each other personally. We're trying to get to know each other. I don't care if I don't ever, and I make it clear, I don't care if I don't ever do business with you again. But if I do my job, they won't be able to stop us from doing business together, because I'm going to service his needs in business. But I got to get to know him first so that I can understand what it takes to satisfy the business side. And the personal builds from there. But I keep them separate. And I tell them, hey, if this thing ever goes awry, and I want you to understand, you don't have to buy from me. I get it. But now that I know you and I like you, and seems like you like me, and we have a good time together in the field.
Your wife sure as hell likes me.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, whatever you do, you better understand when you go home, she's going to kick your ass. But at the end of the day, I still keep it separate, and I didn't ever let that interfere. I didn't use my personal relationship with them to get business. I never did that. My personal relationship with them, here's the way I always looked at it. My personal relationship with a client guaranteed me I could always get an audience and make my pitch. And if I could ever do that, I'd win 80% of them. And that's what that gave me. But I never damaged it. I never used it. I purely delivered every time. I didn't go in and say, hey, old buddy, old pal, just remember about that hunt. You owe me the order this week. I never did that. And that's where a lot of people fail, is they use that. And I never did.
You talked about like giving someone your presence and just what you call simple actions and patterns of behavior. Are there any other, I don't want to call them tricks or methods you have to get behind someone's gate that you've found to be universally or oftentimes effective? Or how do you go about getting behind someone's gate and going through all that?
If you can ever get them one-on-one, you stand a much better chance, obviously. But the biggest thing, though, is what I said early on about people, is you consistently give them the respect as a human being they deserve, and be prepared at any moment when you see that door crack that opens up and allows you to step in. Sometimes it takes a year or two, but be ready, because the second that gate cracks, if you're not stepping in, you missed it. So you got to constantly be on your game, be on your toes to take advantage of it. And I use the gate purely as a symbol of we live our kind of hiding when we just don't really want to face whatever's in front of us. And I told you at the start, when I talk to somebody, I don't care who's around. It doesn't matter to me. Until mine and your conversation's over or we get interrupted, I don't see anybody else in the room. You won't see me look around and look over your shoulder and do this.
You're not going to fit in Los Angeles trying to be a social climber if that's not how you go about it.
Yeah, I'll just miss that climb. It doesn't matter what part of the world you're in, though, or what part of the country, you'll find the ones that'll allow you to get to know them. They're there. Give them respect.
Speaking of giving me something, you got any more of those 5-cent coupons off the hot dogs?
Man, back then we were selling hot dogs for 69 cents a pack. A nickel was big. Now a pack of hot dogs is about $4. And you notice they stopped couponing a lot, only in store. That's a racket too in itself. Yeah, see, what happened is the grocery stores got wise and said, you guys are paying a clearinghouse 13 or 12 or 15 cents to clear that coupon so that the money gets sent to grocery stores, and the grocer said, oh no, we'll put it on the back of the sales slip and you just pay us that clearinghouse money plus the coupon. Oh yeah, they got smart. Those were fun days, man. I look back, it was a challenge at the time, but I look back and that was a lot of fun.
Man, how do I find 10 more? How do I find 10 more of you? This is like the ideal conversation for me. I love talking to people like you.
Kind of like talking to your grandfather, right? Let's get the old guy in here with a rocker.
You haven't really said it this way, but it's another way of me rewording some things you've said. It's extremely refreshing to talk to somebody who gives it to you straight without any bullshit.
Yeah, I go back to being simple. That's what Scott said from the start, but that's... Think about it. If you're kind of simple in your approach, absolutely everybody can engage with you. If you talk like Elon Musk thinks, you're gonna limit your audience. And then you couple that with paying respect, and even the California people, which I have a sister that lives out there, even the California people you can get to know.
We're a difficult bunch, I won't lie. High maintenance at its finest, and we sure know how to run it. And we sure know how to run a state.
Yeah, come over here. We got a governor named Tater.
That'll work.
Yeah, he's a good governor, but his name is Tater. That puts us at a disadvantage from the start.
That's amazing,
Sammy. We're coming up on the tail end here. Where can folks find you? How can folks reach out? Say, for example, if they want your consulting, where can they find your book?
My book is on Amazon. It's called Behind the Gate, Winners Win. I'm on Facebook every day giving out Sammyisms, which are still today make me go, wow, people read those. Under Sammy Knight, S-A-A-E Knight, and then K-N-I-G-H-T, and then my Instagram, which I'm not as active on, is my nickname as a child and still to this day in my hometown is used, is Tiger Knight. 58 is my Instagram, and or just DM me.
We have a phoenix, a tiger, and a knight here. We're cooking with gas.
Oh man, this is coming full world for me. I think I've seen some of your Facebook things before. That's, oh my gosh, I'm gonna have to go back through it. I could have sworn I've seen you on that. That's amazing. That's so cool. I remember like this guy. I like this guy. I could do this. I like this guy. He's on to something. I'm gonna go rewatch some of them. That's amazing. I'm glad you still do that. Put yourself out there. Because a lot of times you don't have to do that stuff.
No, I enjoy it. You're kind of odd. I don't know. Steumann's wanted to push me to do some of these things. But I might go a whole week and not even think about something. Then I sit down and I write 10 or 15 of my Sammyisms and find pictures to put with them, and they're short and they're designed. I don't know why I do them. They just started happening, I think. But my thinking in them is all I want to try to do is make you think just a little bit. I'm not going to give you the solution other than if I can make you think a little bit, you'll find the solution. It's real easy.
Love it. I'm excited to catch up on those.
Yeah, I got another book coming out next year. It's in the process right now. I've already written it, and then the third book sometime in the future, and I'm about 2/3 through that.
It's a productive guy. Yeah, next time we'll have to chat about your writing process and all that for a guy who ostensibly doesn't know how to spell grammar. It's pretty good.
That's right. I blame all that on Steumann, man. He's the one that told me, he said, write a book, and if what you'll do when you write your first one is you'll find out that you have three. And I'm going to have to call him a liar, because when I wrote my first one, I actually have six. And, I've got the other two, one of them written, the third one almost written, and the other ones are in my head. So why not? It's fun. It's fun in my hometown because I have people that I went to high school with, and they're like, we didn't think you did that well in English. I'm like, I didn't. I don't know why I wrote this damn thing. I don't know. But anyway, we all learned, right?
It's the ideas behind them. It's the wisdom and ideas you have behind it. They got a million ways. You could do auditory. You could pay someone to write it for you if you spew out the ideas. There's so many ways to do it. But I'm glad you're doing that. And I'm glad you got. I'm gonna read all six front to back. as long as they come with those coupons at the back, I'm interested. Yeah.
You know what? That's a great idea. I should put a coupon on the next one. Buy this one and get 5 cents off the next one.
Thank you so much for coming. This was an absolute blast. It really was. And they're all different, but this really was up there for me. And I really enjoy speaking with people who have wealth and knowledge and years past me and more experience. So a lot to learn, and I'm glad you're still sharing all that through your Sammyisms and books and continuing to build your team and see them through their success. I think it's a great thing. I love that you don't seem to believe in retiring. I share that belief. And I think one person said something that always stuck with me: those who can do should. And so I think you can do, and it's nice that you are.
Yep, that's a good point. Thank you.
Yeah, Sammy, every time that we've had the honor to speak, or every time that I've had the honor to listen to hear you speak, it's always been just filled with gold nuggets and wisdom, and very simple and to the point, which the more experience, the limited experience that I have on this earth, is the more I appreciate the simplicity and find the genius in it. So I just really appreciate you and everything that you're doing and everything that you're about.
Thank y'all so much. It was an honor to be on. And when you're the old guy in the room, it's nice to be called out by the young guys in there. I will say this, though, when I go to meetings and young folks like yourself, I always make light of this, but people come up and they're like, "Hey, man, let me get a selfie with you." I'm like, "What's the matter? You afraid I'm going to be dead before the next one? You got to get it done right now." Really?
I got a quick thing on that you might appreciate. There's a comedian, Louis C.K. I don't know if you know him, but regardless of the name, people would say, someone asked him on an interview, like, "How do you handle, if you're a celebrity, how do you handle when people come up to you and ask for a photo?" And he says, "I look him in the eye and say, I'm not going to give you a photo, but I'll have a conversation with you." And he said, "No one's ever taken him up on it."
Maybe that's what I need to do, and it'll slow down my conversation. No, I'm just kidding. I want to always have those. Are one last thing I'll say is, because I've been so blessed and so fortunate, I'm the one that's the benefactor in every opportunity I have to speak, to be in meetings like entrepreneurs or executives or Apex. And I'm the one that wins. I learn so much more, and seeing people grow right before my eyes is, man, that is so cool. I didn't have a coach when I was 30. I didn't know what that was. My only recollection of a coach was the guy that was kicking my ass in high school and junior college football. If I had it to do over again, everybody says, "Hey, what would you do different?" I'd have found a coach sooner. I really would. And you guys are coaches. You should share, man. You got a lot of knowledge. Help these people get better.
Appreciate that.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we're doing our part, but it's good to have people like you on board with it. So thank you so much. It was an absolute blast and honor. You're the man. Keep going.
Take care, Sammy. See ya.
You bet. Thank you. Bye.
Now, with this episode at a close, let's fucking vamos on out of here.